article about Margaret Sanger. Margaret Sanger is the founder of Planned Parenthood. She was not around in recent days. In fact, she was in the 20s when she was on the scene. And there's a couple things I just want to read about this operation that Martha Sanger was involved in. And you'll see something very interesting. It says, at a March 1925, I don't know, was anyone around in 1925? Probably not. But at a March 1925 International Birth Control Gathering in New York City, a speaker warned of the menace posed by the black and yellow peril. The man was not a Nazi or Klansman. He was Dr. Knuff, a member of Margaret Sanger's American Birth Control League, which along with other groups eventually became known as Planned Parenthood. Sanger's other colleagues included avowed and sophisticated racists. One, Lathrop Stoddard, was a Harvard graduate, the author of The Rising Tide of Color Against White Supremacy. Stoddard was something of a Nazi enthusiast, which described the eugenic practices of the Third Reich as scientific and humanitarian. And Dr. Harry Laughlin, another Sanger associate and board member of a group, spoke of purifying Americans' human breeding stock and purging America's bad strains. These strains included the shiftless, ignorant, and worthless class of antisocial whites of the South. So if you're from the South, they didn't like you. Not to be outdone by her followers, Margaret Sanger spoke of sterilizing those she designated as unfit, a plan she said would be the salvation of American civilization. And she also spoke of those who were irresponsible and reckless, among whom she included those whose religious scruples prevented their exercising control over their numbers. She further contended that there was no doubt in the minds of all thinking people that the procreation of this group should be stopped. That's us, the religious people. So these, and that's the founder of Planned Parenthood. So we find that Planned Parenthood has never been an organization that was pro-life or pro-people, as we see there. And it wasn't just babies at the time. Secondly, this is an article, of course, you've probably heard of the New York law that was passed and the cheering that was done when they passed that law. But I do want to just read something from this. I won't read the whole thing, but I mention always when we go out that the New York law has something that changes the criminality of a doctor performing an abortion. It says the new act, which was subsequently signed by New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, will mean that the killing of a late-term baby will no longer be criminalized, but instead be governed under the public health code. Previously, the termination of an unborn child over 24 weeks could result in arrest or charge of homicide. Now, preborn babies will be stripped of legal protection, and mothers will have limited legal options should their unborn children come to harm. So no longer with that law will it be criminal if a doctor murders a baby. And that changes things. And so that's something that came up with that law and possibly could go across the country and in states that are very liberal. Here's another article. Now this one's dated December 2019, a New York bill, which is a bill that is going to go into, be voted on, would force all public colleges to offer free abortions. And that's in New York State. And what it is, it's chemical abortion. So if you go to a college in New York, they can give you free chemical abortion pills. And there is two actual pills that they give you, and it's a terrible procedure. And I know that Pastor Burrow talked about the chemical abortions. Here's another article that I found, and this is dated, let me see if I can find it. This is very recent, though. 12/14/2019. Planned Parenthood is to open clinics at 50 Los Angeles high schools. It says Planned Parenthood, the leading abortion provider in the U.S., is set to open up 50 new clinics in Los Angeles area high schools, set to open within the next 3 years. The new clinics were announced on Wednesday, will be operated in cooperation with the Los Angeles United School District and the Los Angeles Department of Health. At least five of the new clinics are already open in Los Angeles. And what's interesting, it says the 50 schools were selected because they are largely in low-income neighborhoods that lack these type of facilities, the most vulnerable population Planned Parenthood could find. So they're going to open 50 clinics right in the high schools. Of course, what they're going to do is they're going to encourage those in the high schools that are pregnant to get abortions, which we know that that's what they do. Then, now this is the bad news. This is the attack that they're doing, and it just is continual. We always print out, now this is from 12/15/2019. I print out this abortion counter, and it's on numberofabortions.com. And I read these numbers. In fact, I usually look at this or keep it up for 10 minutes. So in 10 minutes, they record this information, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But they have that in a month's time. Now, I do this every month, but in a month's time, in the United States, there were 90,630 abortions in 1 month in the United States. Since Roe versus Wade, of course, that's the same thing. There's 32,838 since Roe versus Wade in the world, and that's a statistic that I usually use. In 1 month's time, there was 3,883,719 abortions. And since 1980, I had to look at this figure, 1,558,274,871 abortions since 1980. Children, babies that have been aborted in the world. And those things, you read those statistics, and you can see why an organization like the Alpha Women's Center, how important it is. How important it is, as we heard even in the update, of seeing these ladies get the gospel. And you know, if you really think about it, if a pregnant woman gets saved, she will then not abort her baby, and she will then have a biblical perspective in raising that child. I mean, it's just how important it is to give the gospel. I'm so thankful they do that at the Alpha Women's Center. But also, one other thing. If you listen to WVCY, they always have their weekend update. And they just packed that full of news. Jim Schneider had an update on Planned Parenthood. Someone called into the show, or maybe this wasn't the weekend update, but someone called in and said his friends told him that Planned Parenthood, they don't do any abortions, that he was wrong. And so Jim Schneider said, well, what you need to do is look up, they just put out their yearly report. And on the yearly report from Planned Parenthood, he said, this is what the statistics were. Said in 2019, they performed 345,672 abortions in the United States. Now, he made a comparison, because sometimes we need a comparison. And I know my daughters drive school bus. Jim drives school bus. He said it's as if you took 17 school buses and filled them to capacity. That's how many children are aborted every single day. Now, that's astounding when you think about it. I mean, that kind of gives you a picture. Planned Parenthood is not stopping. Now, I have an article in the back that They refused to follow. President Trump has done a lot of things for pro-life movement. Pastor mentioned that this morning. And one of the things was that they could not have their clinics combined with their abortion operation. And in order to get tax money, and they then said that we don't want the tax money because they wanted to do abortions. And so they're not giving up, and it's they're on the attack, and it's continual. But there's been a lot of good things that have happened in the pro-life movement, many victories that have taken place. I've got an article. My wife told me about this, and so I looked this up. And a lot of these things, I just look for these. Here's an article, and this is dated 2017, October 25th. Doctor, and this might be what Pastor's talking about this morning. Doctors perform incredible surgery on a baby inside the womb. It says a baby boy diagnosed with spine deformity has undergone life-changing surgery while still inside the womb. His mom was 24 weeks pregnant when doctors lifted her womb out of her body to operate on this tiny baby. They did the surgery. It was an hour-long surgery, and the doctors talk about what they did, and then they put the baby back in the womb, and they've done this surgery apparently since the 1990s, and they have had 24 babies. They've done the surgery and have all survived and have done well. And so as you think about that, that's an incredible thing. But that means they must think that's a human being in that womb. Why would you do surgery on something that, the Planned Parenthood says is nothing? There's nothing, that's just tissue. But they did those surgeries, and I think that's just a wonderful thing. Here's another article, and this is from 12/14/2019. It says, why abortion clinics in the U.S. are rapidly closing? Well, we can thank some of the states that are passing laws that require a doctor to be able to have practice at a hospital. They have to have admitting privileges at a nearby hospital, and because most of these doctors cannot get those, then they have to close those clinics. So that's a real blessing that have taken place. The heartbeat law, there are 10 states that have passed the heartbeat law, and if you look on the chart in the back, I think the heart beats at 18 days or 20-some days. And that would mean as soon as they hear that physical heartbeat, they no longer could do an abortion. And that's a wonderful law. Now that's being, judges are putting stays on that, but those states have passed that. As of, I don't know when I heard the statistic from the legal counsel, but they said that President Trump has appointed now over 200 federal judges, and those judges are all conservative judges. And that's what's going to help the pro-life cause, because when these things go to court, there's going to be good conservative judges that are going to deal with those cases. And it's because of McConnell in the Senate, and I guess, you don't want to, but if you want to thank Harry Reid, he's the one that did that where they could pass those judges for Barack Obama. And now McConnell does the same thing for us as far as conservative judges. And that's a blessing. We just thank the Lord for that, all the things that are being done by President Trump for the pro-life movement. And then Brian said to me earlier, he said, we didn't have a prayer request for the Packer game. Well, here's an article, I looked it up, about the Packers Foundation donating to Planned Parenthood. Now, let me just read a couple things about this, and this is the first time they've ever done that. It says, to the consternation of pro-life Packer fans in Green Bay and across the nation, the NFL Team Foundation decided to fund Planned Parenthood, the nation's largest abortion business that annually kills more than 330,000 babies. The news may prompt some cheeseheads to abandon their support for the team until it stops financing America's biggest abortion corporation. On Wednesday, December 4th, 2019, They released their annual grant recipients. Among the 192 grantees was number 112, Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin Incorporated, Milwaukee. Now, they just opened, I think it was 2 years ago, a state-of-the-art abortion clinic in Milwaukee, and now they gave that money to Planned Parenthood of Milwaukee. And this is the interesting thing, and this is what I found in this article. The Green Bay Packers Foundation was founded in 1986 by Judge Robert Perrins with a mission statement. And this is the mission statement: to support charities possessing one or more of the following goals, perpetuates a community environment that promotes families and the competitive values of athletics, contributes to player and fan welfare, ensures the safety and education of children, and or prevents cruelty to animals. And the Pro-Life of Wisconsin made this statement: if the foundation truly wanted to promote families and ensure the safety of children, they would not be financially investing in an organization that violently destroys children's lives every day. And any perceived benefit Planned Parenthood provides to society is wiped out every time they kill a baby, in which case is 4,639 times a year in Wisconsin alone. And I think probably it's because I guess we can thank our previous president, Barack Obama, when he talked about what's happening in America, where he said, this is the new normal. That's not the new normal. The new normal is not accepting the killing of babies all the way up to when they can be born, or even afterward, and then not say that it is murder, but it is some health issue, or covered under the health issues. So that's not the new normal. The new normal, or there is no new normal, there's just the old normal that we have in God's Word. Now, I'm going to, for a brief time here, I'm going to do something that my wife mentions every time when she shows her presentation. We did show it the last time, not too long ago, so we didn't do it tonight. But she always ends it with the verse from 1 Samuel 17, where David says, is there not a cause? So take your Bibles tonight to 1 Samuel chapter 17. And I'm going to briefly go through this, give the setting of where this statement from David comes. 1 Samuel 17, I'm not going to read the scripture, we'll read it as we go. But the setting for this battle, and it was a battle situation, it was between the Israelites and the Philistines. The setting was in the Valley of Elah. The Valley of Elah, and I've never been to Israel. I should have probably looked at a map maybe a little bit closer, but the description of it, it's a passage between the coastal cities and Judah, where Jerusalem was located. And it was in the Valley of Elah. There were hills on each side of the valley. The Israelites were encamped on the northern hills, and the Philistines on the southern hill. So let's look here in 1 Samuel 17, verse number 1. It says, now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle, and were gathered together at Shokoth, which belonged to Judah, and pitched between Shokoth and Azekah in Ephes-Damon. And Saul and the men of Israel gathered together and pitched by the Valley of Elah, and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them. And this was this Valley of Elah. 1 Samuel 14:52, because as we think about this, Saul was king, and he had had battles with the Philistines, and so this was just another battle that he was having. And 1 Samuel 14:52 says this, gives us insight into these conflicts that were going on between these frequent foes. And there was sore war against the Philistines all the days of Saul. So Israel was in constant conflict with the Philistines. And this was just another battle that was taking place. Israel had become a major power in the region of Israel and had a powerful standing army. And so we find now in verse number 4 that they came out into the valley. And there went out this champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. And he had a helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. And he had greaves of brass upon his legs, and a target of brass between his shoulders, and the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron, and one bearing a shield went before him. And he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel, and said unto them, "Why are ye come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine, and ye servants of Saul? Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. And if he's able to fight with me and kill me, then will we be your servants. And if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us." And the Philistine said, "I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." Now, many commentators believe that the reason that this took place is that in this valley of Elah, there was actually a valley in the middle of it. Now, the valley itself was covered with barley and some believe corn. It was an area that was fertile where they grew crops. But in the middle of the valley was a very rugged valley that divided the valley of Elah. And so actually the armies on the southern side and on the northern side, they couldn't really come and battle together in the valley because of this rocky, jagged area. It kept them from having what they would consider a battle in a valley. And so what was done is they sent a champion out and said, "What will decide the battle is the fighting of the champion against someone from Israel." And so he came out, and it says he came out for 40 days, and he was challenging them to send out a person. Now, if you think of this giant Goliath, many have determined some of the things about him. First of all, they determined that he was about 8.5 feet tall. So a Jewish soldier was not 8.5 feet tall. They were on a smaller size. They were probably not even as tall as possibly us, most of us in America. But he was 8.5 feet tall. The mail that he wore that protected himself was 157 pounds. So imagine what strength he must have had just to be able to carry that. I guess as I think about this, I compare it to the Knights of the Round Table, how they had that armor. They were fine when they were on their horse, but as soon as they fell off their horse, they were basically, people just come up and they kill them because they couldn't get up because of the armor. But so similar to this, but this male weighed 157 pounds. It says he had a target of brass on his back. There was a lance. This target would be considered like a lance or a javelin that he could take from his back and use it to throw as a weapon. And then he said that he had a spearhead that weighed 17 to 18 pounds on the spear that he used in battle. Now, I went and they were discounting turkeys at Save-A-Lot, and I bought a 22-pound turkey. I could hardly carry it, so imagine this spear. So this was a fearsome warrior. And it says he came out and presented himself for 40 days challenging the people of Israel. And we described the valley within the valley. So this is the reason why they were doing this challenge. But we find that in verse 11, let's go down to verse 11 in 1 Samuel 17. It says, "When Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid." All these were in a standing army, and there's their soldiers. Saul was the head and shoulders above all men in Israel, and yet none of them felt that they wanted to go fight Goliath, who was a giant, as they called him. Now, David, we find what happens that bring David on the scene. Now, David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse. He had eight sons, and the man that went among men for an old man in the days of Saul, and the three eldest sons were in the standing army. And Jesse went and followed Saul to the battle, these three eldest sons. Now, one commentator said they were not young men. They were older, being eight sons, that one could have been in his 50s. Now, being in the standing army, but I'm not sure the age, but possibly older. These sons were older. And the names of his three sons that went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, next to him Abinadab, and the third Shammah. And David was the youngest, and the three eldest followed Saul. And David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. So we find David was out in the fields, and we know about David. He wrote the book of Psalms, and he communed with God, and God gave him protection when he battled the lion and the bear. And it showed a life of communion with God. And so here David was tending the sheep. And it says in verse 16, and the Philistine drew near morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. And Jesse said unto David, his son. So they're in the battle area for 40 days. No doubt they had run out of supplies. And at the time, my son-in-law was gracious to bring me these. He's in the Army Reserves. They didn't have MREs. So he brought me some MREs, kind of to show you. And I said, I don't know how they put these in a pack. They're huge. But for instance, spaghetti with beef and sauce. They didn't have these, the Israelite army. And this one, I'm glad they didn't have this. Penny with vegetable sausage crumbles in spicy tomato sauce. I don't know why you'd want to eat that on the battlefield. But so they didn't have MREs. So what they did was families would put together food and they would send it into the army area, and then they would feed their own families and then others, soldiers in the area where their family members were. So this is what David did. It said, David went, and Jesse said unto David his son, take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp of thy brethren, and carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their thousand, and look how thy brethren fare, and take their pledge. So David was to bring what many would consider about a bushel of grain, 10 loaves of bread, and then 10 cheeses, or what they would say would probably be slices of curd. I'm not sure what slices of curd, but they bring these cheeses to the captain of the army that could be used for all the others. And then it says, which I guess I've never seen before, it says, and take their pledge, find out how they're doing. See if they need anything. And so David then brings these things. And now Saul and they and all the men of Israel, verse 19, were in the Valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. Now, they were not in combat. They were in preparation. And so they had not gone fighting with each other yet, but they were getting in preparation for battle. And it says, and David rose up early in verse 20 in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper and took and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the trench as the host was going forth to the fight and shouted for the battle. And Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army. And David left his carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage and ran into the army and came and saluted his brethren. Now, as I studied this, it was interesting. He came onto the site of the army where they were. He came in a carriage, and they put the carriage on the outskirts, and how they described it was when they traveled into the battle and they took their arms and their supplies, they took all the wagons and they made a circle at the back of their camp so that in case there was anyone that would attack from the back, it kind of reminded me of what they did in the West with the circling of the wagons. And so it does say that David came in a carriage, they put it in that circle, and then he went into where the soldiers were. And it says in verse 23, and they talked with him, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words, and David heard him. So now David comes on the scene, he brings the supplies, he goes to see his brothers to see how they're faring, and the giant comes, and David now hears what the giant is saying to the people of Israel. He greeted the brethren, and now he hears the challenge. And he spake the same words. And it says, defying the soldiers of Israel, defaming and blaspheming. The word defile means. And David heard him doing this. In verse 26, he asks, what shall be done to the man that stands up against this uncircumcised Philistine for what he has done in defying Israel, and in reality, blaspheming the God of Israel, which he was doing. He was uncircumcised, he was an ungodly Philistine, and he was basically blaspheming the God of Israel. Eliab, the eldest brother, heard him and rebuked him. He considered that he was full of foolish pride and possibly trying to push someone else to go out and fight Goliath. And David, in verse 29, who had come from the fields of his father, keeping sheep and having sweet fellowship with God, did not understand. And he said, what have I done? Is there not a cause? And so tonight, as we think about David, we think about David coming on a scene, seeing a tremendous need where there's aggression against not only the army of Israel, but the God of the army of Israel, and defying the God of the army of Israel and blaspheming him. And he says, is there not a cause for someone to go and to fight for God? Do we not have a duty, he thought, and responsibility standing up for the God we serve, doing what we believe and know is right? And he proceeds to volunteer himself. And we know as that story continues, this account, that he went. And it's an interesting thing that Inside Valley had a stream running through it. And it says that as David went across to face the giant, it says that he picked up some smooth stones out of that stream that he went. And that's what, of course, he killed Goliath with. So tonight, as we close, the question is there not a cause? You know, we think of the Alpha Women's Center, we think of these other centers, and I know they're trying to start a brand new crisis pregnancy center. Baptist for Life, Brother Burrow preaches in churches. If you ever look at his schedule, almost every single week, he was telling me that this week he has, in the week next, I guess, 2 weeks, he has board meetings. I said to him, three board meetings. I said, now you're not going to get too bored, are you, at the board meetings? But he has three board meetings where they discuss how they're going to help reach women and save babies in three centers. And as David said, is there not a cause? As my wife finishes her presentation, is there not a cause? Is there not a cause for us as Bible believers to stand behind these people on the front lines and pray for them, vote for people that will pass laws and judge cases in the favor of pro-life, to be those type of prayer warriors and volunteers to be involved in saving these lives of these babies? Is there not a cause? And that's what David said. David said to all those soldiers, all those trained soldiers, well-equipped, all the things they needed to battle, he said, is there not a cause to stand up for God whom you serve? And so tonight, is there not a cause? I trust that you'll find that God would have a place for you to serve, whether to volunteer. I know Sue said they need volunteers. One day a month, I mean, we can probably find that time. They have people come in and do repairs. I know the pastor down here at Souls Harbor went in and put security cameras in. Others have fixed different things there, so maybe if you know how to do any repairs or anything, I'm sure with an old building, something's falling apart there that probably could need your help. But is there not a cause? I believe there is. May God help us to see that and to ask God, what can we do? All right, let's